Now, that's the first thing you've said right.
I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Well, that's all you have to do.
Is to throw the ball at first base.
Yes.
Now, who's got it?
Naturally.
Look, if I throw the ball at first base, somebody's got to get it. Now, who has it?
Naturally.
Who?
Naturally.
Naturally?
Naturally.
So I pick up the ball and I throw it to Naturally.
No, you don't. You throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
That's different.
That's what I said.
You're not saying that.
I throw the ball to Naturally.
You throw it to who?
Naturally.
That's it.
That's what I said.
Listen, you ask me.
I throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
Now you ask me.
You throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
That's
same
it.
As you.
Don't change them around.
Same as you.
Go ahead, now get it over.
I throw the ball to who? Whoever it is drops the ball and the guy runs a second.
Yes.
Who picks up the ball and throws it to what? What throws it to, I don't know. I don't know, throws it back to tomorrow. Triple play.
Yes.
Another guy gets up and it's a long fly ball to because. Why? I don't know. He's on third and I don't give a darn.
What?
I said I don't give a darn.
Oh, that's our shortstop.
I'm an idiot. Come on.
What is that, Lou, you've got in your hand there? Another telegram?
Yeah, but look, I just got a telegram from Joe DiMaggio.
Well, go ahead and read it.
Okay. Dear Lou, just heard your show. I think you have the makings of the world's greatest natural ball player. You have spiked teeth, a club head, and you've been off your base for years.
Good night. Good night, folks.
Good night, everybody. And a special good night to Joe DiMaggio. Get well quick, Joe.
Listen to Abbott and Costello again next Thursday night when Costello is going to build himself a new prefabricated house. You can imagine the trouble he'll get into. I don't know whether it'll be a one-story house or a two-story house, but anyway, that's another story. This is Michael Roy in Hollywood wishing you all a pleasant good night for Camel.
From April of 1947, there's the classic Who's on First routine, Bud Abbott and Lou Costello. In a moment, we'll enjoy Inter Sanctum Mysteries and Musical Score as Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Inter Sanctum Mysteries each week invited its listeners through the squeaking door to another night of horror. Lights Out veteran Raymond Edward Johnson provided the sibilant tones of Inner Sanctum's macabre host during the first four seasons. Paul McGrath later took over as Inner Sanctum's sinister host in May of 1945. Inner Sanctum Mysteries aired from January 1941 through October 1952 on radio and was created and produced by Hyman Brown. On today's program, Paul McGrath begins a long run as Inner Sanctum's sinister host, a role that he continued into television. The program is entitled Musical Score from May of 1945. A killer weaves a gruesome tale of music and murder on the high seas. It's Inter Sanctum Mysteries on Yesteryear.
Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup present Inter Sanctum Mysteries. Good evening, friends. This is your horror host at the squeaking door of the Inner Sanctum. Come in, come in. Hang your hats on the torture rack over there and get cozy. Tonight, we've got cadenzas and cadavers, murders and melodies. Oh, that's all I can tell you now. No sense putting the cart before the hearse. Is there? The title of our story is Musical Score. It's an original radio play by Christopher Mayo. And our star is Barry Kroger, who plays the role of Grasso. It's the story of a simple melody and of a killer who, as our story opens, is fighting desperately and alone against a raging storm off the coast of Maine. The lifeboat he is in is half foundered. The man's wild rowing does little good.
I'm a murderer! A murderer! I killed to be free, and I am free. Free!
Oh, am I? Did I do it all for nothing? Peter Tull and his wife, they were the first to go, almost in the same spot. Tull, world-famous composer. Tull and that tune of his. He had all three of us on the life raft crazy with it. That maddening tune. I can still hear him humming it. Still hear it. But the sea was calm that day. Dead calm.
15 days of calm. 15 days on a raft with a sick woman and three men. And that sun. Tull! Stop that blasted humming!
Sorry, Smythe. Just that Marcia seems to like it. Part of a symphony I'm working on.
It does get on our nerves, Tull. How is your wife?
I don't know, Grasso. Poor Marcia.
Yes. Yes, I know.
I'm hungry. Smythe, how about some ration?
Ah, that fat belly of yours. I told you before, Ivanov, as chief mate, I run this life raft. We've got rations for one person for 2 days. No one eats. We don't. Now forget it.
Well, we ought to be practical.
Smythe, what made the Santa Margarita go down so quickly?
I told you. Nothing but a stray mine. It was Argentine registry, coffee boat, a neutral. It's all it could have been.
Oh, cut it out, will you, Tull? Or change the tune at least. I can't stand it.
Sorry.
We're done for.
Now, you may be a famous playwright, Grasso, but you don't know the sea. We're near the main fishing banks. We got a chance of beating the fisher we can hold out. Tull! Tull, will you stop that blasted tune?
Yes, for heaven's sake, Tull, quit it! What a trio. A perfume manufacturer, a playwright, and a sailor. We all wanted food. We all wanted water. Sweet. An end of Tull's humming. Well, I wanted all that more than the others did. Without Marcia Tull, I could eat a little. Without Peter Tull's song, I could rest. The 17th night it was. The moon painted us all in silver and black. The others slept. Tull had his wife's head cradled in his lap. I crawled over to Tull.
How is she, Tull?
You know, I think she's getting better. She smiled at me a minute ago. My singing helps.
Go on, Tull. Hum. Hum your song.
Hum, you young fool, for the last time. Hum.
I cut off his infernal song, cut it off with my fingers, digging into the yielding flesh of his throat. He slumped over his wife's body. I closed my ears to her moans. I pushed them both into the dark water. I was a murderer.
All right. So Tull's gone. So's his wife. But they didn't fall off. One of the three of us murdered them. And it wasn't me.
I don't think you did, Smythe. I know I didn't.
You're voting 2-1 and electing me the murderer, huh?
Not necessarily, Grasso. It just looks a little like it.
How are you going to prove it? Who's going to believe you any more than they'd believe me? Ivanov was ready to murder for a crust of bread. For all I know, Smythe, you did it to sell Ivanov some rations.
Well, we hang together or we hang separately, then.
Let's be practical about this, Smythe. None of us can afford to be mixed up in even the implication of murder. Suppose we have an agreement.
Huh?
Just in case we are picked up.
What kind of an agreement, Grasson?
Suppose we agree now and for all time that Tull and his wife simply died at sea,
and were buried at sea. On the 21st day, the rations were gone. And the song, we could all hear Tull humming it from the bottom of the sea. We watched each other like animals. On the 23rd day, a fishing boat picked us up, half dead, cooked alive. But we lived. I lived to fear and to kill again. Fear began with a little scene in the Portsmouth Hospital where we were being treated.
Well, you got your belly full of food even now?
Yes, yes. No more hunger pangs, Smythe. How about you, Grosso?
Pretty normal now, I guess.
Oh, by the way, a friend of mine, second mate on another ship, was in to see me yesterday.
Yes?
Yeah. They picked up a couple of survivors from the Santa Margarita before we were rescued. Not interested, eh? They were a man and his wife.
Well, don't be such a dramatic ass, Smythe. Was it...
No. Not poor Marcia and Peter Tull, but... The friends of theirs, the Abraham Davises. You know him?
Davis? The symphony conductor?
Yeah, that's him. Wouldn't he like to know about the Tulls, huh?
You've got a flair for the dramatic, Smythe. Sometimes it's dangerous to be so talented. I began to worry if both of them weren't ganging up on me. But days and weeks passed, and nothing happened. Only the Tull's melody was always with me, day and night. It kept ringing in my head, on and on and on. But at least I hadn't heard from the other two until one morning a letter came from Abraham Davis, the symphony conductor and dear friend of the Peter Tulls.
Dear sir, it has taken me this time to locate you three who were with my lamented friends, Peter and Marcia Tull, when they died at sea. I'm giving a reading from the score of Peter Tull's last symphony, my home prior to its first performance, and thought you might like to hear it.
Hear it? I didn't need a reading to hear it. But I'd have to be there. They would be. Maybe plotting to tell lies about me to Davis. Right then, I decided to kill them both. That way only lay freedom from anxiety. Murder would free me. Ivanov would be first. Yes, fat, beady-eyed Ivanov. I studied their movements. Ivanov worked late at his office every Tuesday night. And on the second Tuesday of each month, the Halifax-bound cargo steamer San Luis left her New York dock. My plan was simple. It involved my waiting for Ivanov in his apartment house on the night of Tuesday, May 8th. My weapon would be simple, too. A common bread knife. Simple and so satisfying.
Good night, Mr. Ivanov. Thanks for the bottle of perfume. My girl's crazy about it.
Not yours. When you get married, I'll give you a quart of it.
Thanks.
I slid the knife from my sleeve and gripped the handle. Ivanov reached his door. His broad back was a leap away. I knew where to strike. You learn those tricks in my trade. An upward thrust just below the right shoulder blade.
You. It was you.
I watched him gasp out his last, feeling no remorse, no pity, just relief that I had nothing more to fear from Ivanov, at least. One more to kill, to be free. One more. I turned my back on the cooling mass at my feet and reached the street. I walked fast. I had only a little while to reach the docks and make my boat. Tull's melody kept beating its tireless notes against my brain.
Well, dear me and glory be, that's my idea of a real thong plugger. Oh, speaking of music and murder, did you ever hear of the fiddler with a violent temper? He murdered his wife because she was always harping at him. Oh, yes, and because she had a cellist disposition, too.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Now let's go back to our murderer who's being haunted by a song. Remember what happened? A composer named Tull and his wife Marcia were thrown off a life raft and drowned by one of three other men on the raft. The killer has been telling us his story as he fights the sea in a lifeboat. You remember that he just murdered Ivanov and is now heading for a Halifax-bound cargo ship.
Flight room, Mr. Grosser. Anything I can do for you?
No, thanks. Not just now. I'm going right to bed. When do we reach Halifax?
Tuesday morning, sir.
Yes.
Good night.
Thank you. Oh, wait. I'm afraid I'm rather a nervous traveler. Well, just between us, do we have competent officers aboard?
They're best, sir. Captain Jarms is tops.
Oh.
There's no better cheap mouth anywhere than Mr. Smythe, sir.
So he was there. I'd gone to a lot of trouble to get aboard that ship, and he was there. I kept out of his way entirely until last night. We were off the main shore. It was raining slightly. I slid the long, well-pointed bread knife into my sleeve and made my way toward the after deck. It lacked 3 minutes of 8 bells.
Skipper, I'm going after a smoke.
There he was, just where he had been every night, smoking, leaning against the rail near the small lifeboat. I could barely see him. It was so dark. But I stole toward him a foot at a time. Now I held my breath. I was so close. Slowly, I brought my arms straight to my side. Flexed my muscles, tense for the thrust. I calculated the lunge. The cigarette told me where his mouth was. Then he turned his head a little, his cigarette flared and lit his face and his eyes were on me.
I thought you'd look me up if I came to the same spot each night. Turning out to be quite a killer, aren't you?
How did you
guess?
Can you still hear me smile? Now, nobody knows what happened on the life raft. Nobody. I'm free.
Oh, you fool. You'll never be free. The song. The song will...
I dumped Smythe into one of the small boats and climbed in myself. I pushed out on the davits. Lowered the boat to within a couple of feet of the water, and then climbed down the supporting ropes to it. I cut the ropes, and the black hull of the ship slid past. We were alone, just Smythe and me, and Smythe was dead. So I threw him overboard, and I was alone and free. And tonight, I'm alone and free. Hear me, Tom! Hear me! No. No. Am I going crazy? It can't be a lie. Not a lie. Well, it must be. It is. God, it's land. Rocks ahead. The surf breaking against
them. Oh, God, close. Too close. I'm going to crash into them. The surf's picking up the boat and throwing me down on the rocks. I'll be killed. No!
Wait, darling. I think I hear something outside.
What?
Stop a minute. I think I hear something.
You don't have to shout. What is it there?
Listen. Isn't that our door? Don't you hear pounding?
How could it be? This is a lighthouse. Who would come out to an island in this storm?
Just the same, I'm going to see.
All right, I'll go with you.
Ah! Good heavens. How did he... No. No. Not you. Stay away, Tal. Leave me alone. You're dead.
He's fainted, Marsha. Here. Give me a hand. Put him in the living room bunk.
Peter?
Yes?
How did he know our name? What did he mean by what he said?
He's changed a lot since we saw him last. Since I saw him last. He was on the life raft with us.
The Santa Margarita?
Yes. I'd know him better than you would. You were ill. His name's Grasso. His was the last voice I heard before we fell overboard. Well, Mr. Grasso, you look a lot better this morning. How is your head?
It throbs. I can't move. What happened?
You were washed up against the rocks in a lifeboat. You must have hit your head and banged up your side.
You didn't drown.
Obviously. You didn't choke me thoroughly enough, Grasso. The water revived me. And I was clutching Marsha's dress.
Yes, but how did you...
Get here?
Yes.
Fishing boat. It was almost dawn when you tried to kill us. I managed to hold Marsha up for a little while. We were lucky.
What are you...
Here. Put your arm around my neck.
No.
I'll take you to the tower.
Where's your wife?
Marsha's gone to the mainland to get the doctor.
We're alone.
We're alone. Relax.
No, don't. Let me go, Tal. I didn't mean to do it. I was crazy with hunger. And that tune of yours. We're all crazy, Tal. I'll pay you.
No,
I'll pay you.
It's too late, Grasso.
Anything.
Don't
struggle.
You could start the hemorrhage that way.
What are you going to do to me?
I nothing, of course.
I...
Here we are.
You're not bringing me up here for the sun and the air, Tal. Why?
Very comfortable in this bed. Marsha liked it here. Wonderful view in every direction. These windows here pull to one side.
What?
Like this, no. See? Now, I'll leave you to rest.
No, don't!
Don't what, Grasso?
Why? I don't know. But you're up to something.
Don't be silly. I'm just going to work on my music for a while. I'm having trouble with one part in it. It goes... Remember, Grasso?
That's it. I see it now. Why, you...
You'll be safe here. I have this barred metal door here to keep saboteurs out. If you want anything, just talk. Acoustics are wonderful down these stairs. You can hear everything.
Talk? No, my head. I'll do anything. Anything. Only don't...
Wait, Grasso. I heard about Ivanov's murder on the radio the other day.
All right, all right! I did it! I tried to kill you and your wife. I killed Ivanov. I killed Smythe. Get the police, but don't play that song!
In the top drawer of the table next to the bed is a loaded revolver.
Stop, Tom! Stop!
My head, I...
Stop!
Can't go on. Revolver. God, yeah. It'll stop it. Now I'll never hear that song again. Never.
Play it! Play your melody, Tom! And the blaze is with you!
I forgot to tell you, Grasso. The gun is loaded with blanks.
There's still a way out. There's still a way out. All right. Tom, you win.
Hello? Oh. Hello, Marcia, darling. No, everything is fine now. Yes, yes, there is something you can do for me. Send Davis a wire, will you? Just say, plan fall production of symphony. Have just finished final score.
Say, how would some boogie-woogie sound to you right now, Sure, we got a moral for tonight's story. If you're thinking of marrying a musician, insist on a big house. Don't go in for this lighthouse-keeping stuff. Now it's time to close the squeaking door until next Tuesday, when Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup bring you Raymond Massey and another Inner Sanctum mystery story directed by Hyman Brown. So, until then, good night. Pleasant dreams.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
From May of 1945, there's Musical Score and Inter Sanctum Mysteries. Well, with that, it's time to close, I'm afraid, our own squeaky door on this edition of Yesteryear. But that's okay. We'll make it a date to be back with you again next week at this very same time for more of the Golden Age of Radio, right here on Yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show. Radio, I miss you so. Dio, volio, dodio, do.
KSSR-DB San Francisco, where the big bands swing.